You may live in a city and have access to all kinds of arts, but I tell you what, for a lot of the country, they have to either go to the city to get that access, or they go without. And I want to bridge that gap.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. The Missoula Children's Theater of the early 1970s took its show on the road, traveling to places like Miles City, Montana, rain or shine, even in February. In 1972, when the directors of Snow White felt uneasy about hauling seven child actors 1,000 icy round-trip miles, they decided to try casting the roles of the seven dwarfs from among the children of Miles City. 450 kids showed up for the audition, and a visionary idea was born. Today, the Missoula Children's Theater tours 16 countries annually, putting 65,000 children into costumes and stage productions each year in tiny towns and large cities. MCT's executive director, Michael McGill, explains how using theater to develop children's life skills can turn into a successful entrepreneurial enterprise. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Welcome, Michael, to the show.
Oh, hi, Arnie. It's nice to be here.
I wanted to do a show on creative arts entrepreneurship, and I couldn't think of a better organization or a better organizational leader than you to bring on the show to talk about that topic.
I appreciate that. We're really proud of what we've accomplished at MCT.
As I said in the lead-in, little red buses in all 50 states, productions in 16 countries, including China, 65,000 children in costumes. How did this all really get started?
You know, it's a fascinating story because it was a good idea that just kind of hit at one point. You know the story about Miles City, Montana, where our founder, Jim Caron, actually went over there thinking that we could do Snow White and the Seven Dwarves in Miles City, but he didn't want to travel across the state with the Seven Dwarves. So he says, maybe there are Seven Dwarves in Miles City that we could cast for the show, and I could go over a little bit early and teach them their scenes. And so he went over there, and they had posted auditions for the Seven Dwarves, and man alive, that town was just came alive, and the auditorium was full of kids that wanted to be one of those Seven Dwarves. And I think that's where the inception for this idea came from. It's just like, wow, people are way more interested in their children becoming the focus of the experience of theater, rather than just a performance for the community. It was a performance with the community. And so that really caught on, and from that we've built an organization that spans the country and the world.
And how big is that organization now, as we fast forward to 2018?
Well, this summer we had 44 different teams on the road in those little red trucks going all over the country and to a lot of places around the world.
And how many staff do you have?
Well, we have about 120 FTEs, full-time equivalents, when it comes to just kind of an average. Our summer season is larger than our fall season, but it just vacillates around there.
You've been with Missoula Children's Theater and Missoula Community Theater, the name it represents both, you know, operations, for what, 38 years?
Yes, sir.
Did you expect it to look like this now when, 38 years ago?
I sure didn't. One time I was kind of musing over the fact of the truck I climbed into in 1981, if it grew as much as the organization grew, it would be like the tires would be 20 feet high. Now, I like visuals, so that was one of those things that I go, man, it's really taken off. But more than just its success and its size, I think it's about what it accomplishes in the world. And that's what I'm proud of, and that's what I'm proud of being a part of for these many years.
And you've played many different roles in the organization over these years.
I sure did. I started as one of the tour actor directors. And I went out on the road for a couple of years. And I really feel like that experience gave me the tools to do a lot of the other jobs I have, because those young people that we send out there, they have to be able to talk to the superintendent as easily and as well as the five-year-old child that's in the show. And they have to really make some good decisions. And over the course of a couple of years of doing that, you really develop some skills that you don't necessarily come out of school with necessarily.
When a truck shows up in a town, tell me what the process is for the week.
It really is a collaboration between the town and our company. We are supplying things that the town oftentimes doesn't have. So the very first thing we do is we meet with a presenter. That's the person that brought us to that town because they want us there. We aren't going out there looking for a barn to present in or something like that. It's we're brought in. That presenter is the one that has arranged for the rooms to rehearse in and where we're going to perform. And they sell tickets to the performance because that's their end of the thing. We don't do the house or anything like that. They've set up and gotten the word out that we're going to have auditions on Monday. And in the United States, during the school year, it's normally an after-school project. In the summer, it's sometimes right in the middle of the day. But our biggest part of the year, of course, is the school year. So a calendar might be, first session would be 4 to 6, and then a little break, and 6:15 to 8:15, so 4 hours a day. The first session on Monday ends up being our auditions. And those auditions, we have to, in 2 hours, figure out who's going to do what parts. And, of course, because we only have two people out on the road, we have to limit how many we can work with just from safety considerations and things like that. But once we've determined what those parts are, we start in right away on Monday night with that second session with some of the kids that have some of the parts that are more challenging, because we're trying to challenge young people that are 5-6 year olds and 16, 17 year olds. So there's obviously some different levels of importance as far as what they play in the show.
And in that audition, short audition period, how many people do you audition and how many parts are you casting for?
We're casting up to 64 because we also are looking for some young people that are interested in the technical side. So 4 of those kids are helping us with being assistant directors, running the sound, running the lights. So we're teaching non-performance skills also. The kids that auditions, you may have 30 kids that audition, but you might have 200 too. So you really have to be able to quickly make some decisions. And it's not just the kids that are showing the most engagement or maybe the brightest faces or things like that. Sometimes you're looking for the kid that you go, you know, they're a pretty shy young individual, and I think that this part would be good for them. My son's kind of an example of that. He said, I don't want to be in a show if I have to say anything, right? And so, sure enough, he was in one of our shows, and he didn't have to say anything, but he learned from that even, and he had a comfort level with that.
So the dream for the organization is more than just theatrical performances. That's an educational agenda as well.
Exactly. I think that we have, in this world right now, I really feel like, and this is a long-term thing, that we've had a need for the kinds of things that interact between people in ways that are very human and also take a certain amount of courage to do, to get up in front of your peers, your parents, your grandparents, and do something that's so totally public. And then from that, get feedback, which is in the realm of applause. And so it's a very public thing that you accomplished. And in that accomplishment, you end up adding to your self-value because you see that you accomplished something that was really, really scary and important.
And then by the end of the week, you what, have 2 performances that are open to the public?
Right, right. We have 2 performances, and we are not the presenters of those performances. The town is, or whoever brought us in. It could be the PTA, you know, different organizations. But when we do those, we've always felt like it's important to do 2 performances, because the first performance, maybe there's one kid that didn't say it just like they wanted to say it, or they were a little scared about it. Well, by the time you do it the second time, you nail it, and then that's what you go away with, is that memory.
And last year you did what, 1,100 performances on the road?
Yes, yes. 1,100 communities.
Wow.
And then times 2.
So you have to be the largest touring performance group in the United States.
Of this kind, I believe we are. If there's anybody bigger, I don't know who it is. But, you know, the size of the organization is not as important as the influence that we have in the world. And I think it's influence in a way that's not just building audiences for the arts in the future, but it's also building those skill levels that if a kid ends up feeling that they have a little more courage than they used to have, they'll try to do something that they haven't tried to do before, and it may lead them to be a doctor. It's not necessarily an actor or an actress.
You mentioned the world, and so I have to bring up that in 2015, you took the little red truck, so to speak, to China. What was that like?
That was fascinating, because the CNTC, which is China National Theater for Children, made a connection with us through the Chinese embassy, in which they wanted to do a joint project of some sort. So in talking to them and coordinating with them, we actually were able to put together a Chinese version of our show, done in English, with Chinese children. It took a little longer than our normal week that we do something like that, of course, and it took some of their instructors to help us with that. It was an overwhelming success, and we were honored to have Ambassador Baucus actually at the show, and it was an exciting project.
Which production did you choose to perform there?
The Princess and the Pea. Which, the way I wrote Princess and the Pea was very interesting, because it has a little bit of, there's a kingdom that has flowing water, and there's a kingdom that has frozen water. And it was like, how do we manage our water systems in between them? You would think that that has nothing to do with the story of Princess and the Pea, but in mine it does.
You bring up an interesting point. So you write scripts and music for the productions, but you're also the executive director and manage the organization. How do you balance your creative side with your managerial self?
Yeah, right. Well, there's the demands of managing the company probably are something that has to be immediate and on the front burner all the time. So I put the artistic things on the back burner. So I'm thinking about what I need to write for next year. Now, it can come slowly and in pieces, and write down ideas as they occur to me, rather than try and say, okay, this week I'm going to write a show. So that's kind of how I manage that. Right now, you mentioned the fact that we're doing community theater too, which is really important for building community in Missoula, Montana, for instance. And I'm directing Sister Act. So I just had my audition, and I'm putting together what that cast looks like. But that program also has a really high impact on how the community of Missoula works together, because it's a common goal kind of a project. There's not too many of those things where we gather together in large groups in order to accomplish one thing. And if people out there are thinking about having a community theater, I highly recommend it, because I think its benefits are not rated high enough, because it does. It builds community. It gives us a chance to come celebrate our town and our talents. And it really, I think, is more important than on the surface going to see a show.
Where do your actors and actresses come from?
They come from all kinds of places. Most of the auditions in the United States that actors go to in order to find jobs, UPTA, which is United Professional Theater Auditions in Memphis, and SETCs, which is Southeastern Theater Conference, and there's a lot of them. I think that we probably see, over the course of a year, maybe 5,000 auditions in which to find those people that are very special, that are not only performers, but they're interested in education. They have people skills. They have emotional intelligence that says this is how this should be approached, and they can make those good decisions.
When the actors and actresses move on from their residency at the Children's Theater, do some of them go into acting and then some go into education?
You bet. There's a lot of them that change their minds from I want to be a performer to I want to be an educator, because they do see the benefits of that, and they've gotten their feet really not just wet, but they're weighed in up to their hip, I think, in education. They become professors at universities. I think there's somebody that works for NPR that used to be one of our tour actors.
Wasn't J.K. Simmons the Academy Award winner, a member of?
He interacted with MCT on many, many projects. He didn't go on the road that I remember, but he was very, very active in the early days of the organization.
Given all of the road companies that are going on and the productions here and managing a large staff, is there a command central at your office that where all of this is laid out?
Right. You can imagine how logistical problems raise their heads oftentimes. And you have to have a team that's willing to take on all sides of those issues. And so I'm really lucky to have such devoted and highly functioning individuals that can really think through those problems and make the right decisions.
We're speaking with Michael McGill, Executive Director of Missoula Children's Theater and the Missoula Community Theater. Michael, what was your background in order to prepare you for this?
I think my background, well, as you know, I've spent most of my life in this company. So having gone through a couple of years of, well, I started as a volunteer. I had been doing some, building some houses and things and going to the University of Montana, got a degree in music. And from that, building houses kind of led it on to helping this fledgling theater build their sets. And then I decided, well, you know, I like what they do. I like what they stand for. I'm gonna go out there and do this on the road for a couple of years. And then after that, I became the music director for the company and started writing the music for the shows and kind of worked into in a small company, you work into things like personnel management. And then pretty soon you're doing department management. And so it's been a progression of almost all of the jobs at the company I had a stint at. So it's given me a real overview of what the whole company does and why.
In addition, you have a building to maintain. How many trucks do you have that you have to manage? What's the size of the fleet?
The fleet is around 50 trucks. We have a couple of vans that go with that. And of course, those are things that you have to continually upgrade and make sure that they're mechanically sound. If you ever have a chance to stop by, and I would invite anybody to do this, come by and see how we actually route these tours to these communities. Some community may say, well, I don't want to have Princess and the Pea if they have it 50 miles away. I want a different show. And last year we had Beauty Lou and the Country Beast, so we don't want that one again. You know, it's all of those logistics that you have to really work out.
Well, plus you mentioned you often do this during the school year, and there are weather issues around the country as well. I'm sure you've run into situations where, like the Postal Service, you're trying to get through on an icy road, or there's weather issues, or you know, somebody gets sick, and you know that's a part of your acting corps.
Right, right. We do have a lot of things in place for commonly things that happen commonly. It is nice that we only really travel once a week from one community to the next one, but that can be, it can be 50 miles away or it could be 400 miles away. I mean, those are logistics you have to take into account too. And there's weather or there's bad air quality or there's who knows what might be going on at any one time.
At this point, after 38 years, what do you find the most challenging part of your job?
I think it's not the sense of, does this matter anymore? Because I feel so strongly that our mission, the development of life skills in children through participation in the performing arts, is more valid now than it ever has been, because I think there's less opportunity to develop those skills. I think, if anything, it's just the ability to keep this project accessible and not let its overheads and things like that overwhelm its mission, which we have the delivery system. We can go to places that are teeny thousand-person communities and supply the same show that we would do in a large city because we bring all of the expertise. We bring the sets, lights, costumes. We just need the kids. And so when you add those kids to the production, it doesn't matter if they came from a really small town or a large place, but I think we do a lot of our best work in those places that don't have opportunity. And my challenge is to keep that happening.
This is a very large-scale, complex entrepreneurial venture. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about money. How is it funded?
We are more than 90% earned income, which means that we could do so much more if we had the opportunity to have more support from the business community of the nation, for instance. Missoula does a huge amount in order to keep this project on track and able to do the kinds of things it could do. But I can only imagine what it could do if we had larger unearned income support.
What do you find is the hardest part of your job these days?
They all seem to line up about equally right now. But I'm actually so honored to be given this responsibility that I don't know if I think of things as being as hard as just another opportunity to crack another nut. to solve another issue that maybe will stay solved for a decade. Of course, finding all of the appropriate personnel in order to do this job, that's always a huge priority. Thank goodness for our HR people that help us really dig down and find out what it is that we need in order to put out there on the road, in order to be working with children all over and all kinds of, I mean, it could be way down in Florida or it could be Barrow, Alaska. I mean, the challenges that go into the different locations even. You don't just drive a red truck to Barrow, Alaska. You have to fly in a Cessna, and you got all kinds of things that you end up doing in order to make those residencies work. But that's part of the fun. Those challenges, those are actually the fun.
Michael, you've been in China. You've been in all the states in 16 countries. Where's the most challenging location that you ever performed in?
Well, that's a tough one because there's different kinds of challenges. There's challenges of language. I did one of my shows in Bolivia, and most of them didn't speak English, and I didn't speak Spanish. So that was very challenging. But how does that compare to, say, an audition in a small community where you have maybe only 15 kids audition? How do you make 15 kids cover 60 parts? So there's all kinds of different kinds of challenges, but like I say, those challenges are what make this job invigorating, especially for those tour actor directors that are out there on the road.
You mentioned Barrows, Alaska. What was that like?
Well, that's a really interesting one because they were very prepared for us. And that was...
they were happy to see any visitors.
No, but they had a great organization, and we had terrific shows there. We do have a documentary that's about us called The Little Red Truck. On that one, there was... did just North America. But there was a community there that was an Inuit village, basically. We had to fly in to get around. They used four-wheelers to get around. The language was partially a native language and partially an English language, and there were individuals in that show that I think really show the kinds of challenges that come from some of the places we go when we're supplying that kind of access. They're not used to, maybe their culture isn't used to getting up in front of people. So it's one of those things where we have plenty of challenges. The real crux of the matter is, do you have problem solvers working for you? And that's what I think MCT has that is, it is so valuable, is that workforce that has decades of experience in what we do.
What I think is interesting for our listeners, hope is interesting for our listeners, is when you think about entrepreneurship, you usually think about, you know, a business, commercial business. But here in the creative arts, you're writing plays, you're writing music, you're auditioning people, you're managing trucks, you're running a building, you're raising, I mean, it has all of the elements that would challenge any entrepreneur. So let me focus on the future. Where do you see things going from here?
Well, I don't see a natural boundary as to how many communities that we could visit or what countries we should visit. I feel like that there's so much that's out there as far as opportunity in this, and really we are doing it at least in a way that others are not. I don't see kind of a naturally built-in, here's the limit, and this far and no further. I do see refining it to do even more things. For instance, we've gone into the area of translating some of our scripts into Spanish, for instance, and doing them in Spanish immersion programs or even in Mexico or things like that, where maybe you do part of the show in English and part of it in Spanish. It just depends on what that community wants. So different languages is a part of it. We've been in Japan, for instance, for 25 years doing what they use as a kind of an English immersion, because they will do the entire show in English and from that learn some conversational English and also just have that opportunity to speak the language, even if maybe they had to learn it phonetically. But by the end of it, they actually have a tool that is very valuable. And I see our international footprint maybe growing in that way. But I really want to focus on having any community that wants us to come in and provide that access that I think is super important. Because you may live in a city and have access to all kinds of arts, but I tell you what, for a lot of the country, they have to either go to the city to get that access or they go without. And I want to bridge that gap.
You seem to be energized by the business of running Missoula Children's Theater and Missoula Community Theater. Will you also continue to write new shows? Does that inform you, or does that also invigorate you to write new material and new shows?
Oh, I love that part. I truly love the ability to make that much of an impact on young people. It's funny, but when you think about 65,000 kids a year, I've probably written 20-some shows. I don't even know at this point. But you multiply the amount of shows by the amount of kids, by the amount of years. I've had so many children speaking my words or singing my songs or some of the little things that are woven into them about not bullying or about valuing yourself or what really makes a hero. Is it the person that's strong or is it the person that steps up and does what's right? Those kinds of little themes that I've been able to share with a population, I think, should think about it, right?
Not to mention 2,200 audiences a year listening to the performances.
Right, right.
Michael, this is terrific. It's great having you on the show. Look forward to continuing to see what Missoula Children's Theater brings to the world.
Thanks, Artie.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin, in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from all our shows. Listen next time to Can Do, when our guest will be Jennifer Sheets, creator of Story Squares, the 2018 John Raffato Business Plan Competition winner. Once again, I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communications solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com.